Okay, so let's get started then. Welcome everyone to the August 28, 2019, 9/11 and Other Deep State Crimes Monthly Conference Call. Craig, would you take the role, please?
Yes, sure. I'll read everybody that I have here. Allison, actually, I'm going to close my window because trucks are going by outside. Anyway, that's better. Okay, Allison Menard, Ann Hendricks, Barbara Honiger, Charles Ewing Smith, Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, David Hooper, David Rold, Fern Tishman, James Hufford, Jessica Coco, John O'Malley, Lawrence Fine, Marty Hopper, Mike Cook, Nita Renfrew, Peter Ketchum, Richard Gage, Susan Serpa, and Xander Arena. Did I miss anybody? Sounds like we're good for the role then.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. So then, let's see, for the minutes of last month, are there any objections to the minutes as they're written? Great, hearing none, then we'll consider them approved. Okay, and then any objections to the agenda as written? Great, hearing none, then we'll consider that approved. And let's get started. Our first guest tonight is Richard Gage, and I don't think he needs an introduction by anyone on this group. Richard, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the call, and take it away.
Should we put it on lecture mode, Cheryl?
Yes, let's do that. Yeah, let me. Now, do you know which one is Richard so we can unmute him? I don't.
Oh yeah, he's here. I'll get him.
Okay.
Okay. So Richard, you're now unmuted. So
well,
you can go ahead.
Everybody.
Hi.
So hello everybody. Welcome to the call. And I guess I'm just going to give you an update on what's going on that I'm aware of with AE 9/11 Truth. Let's go in terms of time. Hold on one second. This would be a better connection. September 3rd, the Halsey study will be released, and that happens at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, on September 3rd that site open and let you know the exact time, but it will be live streamed. You can come to our website at ae911truth.org and hear Professor Halsey release that study, and it's probably a 1.5-hour presentation. His conclusion that fires probably have brought Building 7 down. He just rips apart almost all of the incorrect data and assumptions of NIST, and finds that how the building could have come down. By God, if you take away all 80 columns on at least 8 floors, the building comes down at freefall for about 2.25 seconds, and pretty symmetrically, just like the videos show. So we have a one-minute video that we're creating that will show that the computer side by side with the video, and they look exactly alike. So that's extraordinary. And then we'll have Professor Halsey speak at the University of California on September 5th at 5:00. At the faculty lounge, and we've got people busy flyering over there to get students and faculty from the engineering school to that event there, and excited to have some mainstream media coverage at that event, which we can disclose later. So that's the Halsey study releases. Let's take any questions we might have about that.
We're having a lot of trouble hearing you, Richard. Are you, is there any, yeah, you're kind of breaking up. I don't know if it's just me hearing that, but is there anything on your end you can do? Are you on it? Is it just, yeah, it's not just me. Is there anything you can do on your end that maybe takes you off speaker or something that would give us better reception?
Yeah, hold on a second. Let's see if this is any better, and I've got something else I can do if this is not good enough.
Well, so far it's the same, but...
Oh, it's the same. Shoot. Okay, because I've got 3 bars on my cell phone. I'm going to the other side of the house. Hopefully that will help. Gosh. So I will continue. This is the best I can do at this point. Any questions about oldie study?
Let me put it into the Q&A mode, Richard. Actually, it's a little bit cumbersome to go back and forth. Can we ask the questions all at the end? Do you mind doing that?
Yeah, let me proceed on that. On September 7th, the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, headed by Dave Weissmuller, is putting on a conference at All Souls Church.
Richard, again, we're having a really hard time. It's worse now than it was before, at least for me. Is it for you, Craig, too?
Yeah. It's worse now, yeah.
Well, that's crazy. I don't know what's going on. I've pulled out my earphones now, and I'm on speaker. Is that any better?
A little bit better, yeah.
Could you go outside and climb up a tree for us, Richard?
Yeah, really.
That might help.
I do have a nice sunny yard I'll go into too. I haven't had these kinds of problems typically. Let's see if this is near. So we have a great property in New York. Bill Binney will be at the conference. Marcus and Miller will be there. Christopher Gioia will be there. And Christopher Gioia is one of the 5 commissioners in the New York area that Ted spoke about the other week that have voted unanimously for a new investigation into the destruction of all 3 towers and all the 9/11 events actually all together. So that's pretty special to have speaking there in public. And the Web News in New York has a circulation of 12,000. Craig has written an article for them that is expected to be published in their September issue. We're very excited about that. And then we will be bringing down Washington, D.C., the National Press Club. Christopher Gioia, the fire commissioner, and one of the other fire commissioners, Joseph Tagliosa. They'll be speaking along with Bob and Helen McIlvain. Helen is now on the circuit with Bob. She's fully on board, having seen the 9/11 explosive evidence expert speak out video. She was turned over the edge there. So now she's on with Bob. Which is really fantastic for their family. And, of course, he's the inspirer of the Bobby McIlvain Act, which after this National Press Club press conference, we will be heading to to meetings with congresspersons all throughout the afternoon. We have about 10 meetings set up. 3 of them, I think, are congresspersons, the rest are staff. We hope to have more. We will have more the next day as well. And then there's an event in Washington, D.C., at a restaurant for the locals, where Christopher Gioia, the fire commissioner, and myself will be speaking. And then we're on at 10 p.m. Pacific time, 1 a.m. Eastern. We're going to be on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie before us, except I missed Zurich. There's an event in Zurich put on by Barbara Honegger and other European friends at the beautiful 650-seat venue. And they will have Daniel Ganser. I'll be speaking by Skype. They'll have a German engineer and some other speakers, including Barbara Honegger. And that's I start with that one at 7 in the morning Eastern time. So I'm going from – I have to get up at 6 a.m., and I'll probably get to bed at 6 a.m. The 24-hour day that day. That'll be nuts. So lots of exciting things happening. I think we can go to Q&A now.
Okay, great. Let me check – let me change that to – but again, if you want to ask a question, you press star 6. And Richard, while we're waiting for them, I have a question for you. In the Halsey report, has he had any repercussions or any threats or anything, him or any of his students that worked on this? Oh, Richard, you're muted. Just hang on a second.
I'm on Wi-Fi. I just
could you start over? I didn't.
I heard that question. I have to make a change here. I realize what's happening. I changed it to Wi-Fi calling. I'm going to turn that off.
I think we just lost Richard. Hopefully he'll be back in a minute.
Yeah, I would think he's trying to figure something out on the phone, so I'm sure he'll call right back once he realizes.
So we have three people in line for questions. If there's anyone else, again, it's star 6, so when Richard comes back on, we'll be ready for him. Hopefully he'll be soon.
That's Richard back, Cheryl, so we have to unmute him.
Okay, you are back. Richard, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. It was Wi-Fi calling that I had enabled.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds much better. Okay, so did you hear the question that I asked about any repercussions or anything, threats against Halsey and his work, people who did this study with him?
I've asked him that question 6 times over the last 2.5 years. And he said there's been absolutely nothing. And I edited the study along with others, and it's really good, basically in our hands. So at this point, nothing can go wrong, as far as I'm aware.
Okay, great. All right, so to ask your call now is Mike Cook to ask you a question. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, great, thanks. Not really a question, just kudos. Thank you so much for working so hard all these many years. And big shout out to the fire commissioners for getting on board. I requested a meeting with Congressman Massey, who I got to present a packet of AE 9/11 truth materials at a coffee with your congressman a number of years ago. But they haven't answered back. I got the auto reply that, you know, that they received the request, but I haven't seen anything else. I'll keep bugging them. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks. Okay, next is Xander Arena. Xander, go ahead.
Hey, Richard, can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, Xander.
Hey, man. So my question is, now that the World Trade Center 7 study is complete, is AE and perhaps Professor Halsey prepared, are we prepared to do finite element analysis on Building 1 on the North Tower? I feel like the North Tower would be a relatively easy one to model. I know we have schematics and working drawings and all that, and I wonder if we might venture into that next.
Here's the good news. We have it now in our hands. The structural drawings for the World Trade Center 1 and 2, and we're about to release those and put them up on our website. They came through a FOIA request release from NIST. We were shocked. We've got the materials we need to do just that with. And I'm thinking if the Building 7 study is a big success for the university, that they'll be willing to go in and work on the north end or south towers.
That's awesome news, okay. Man. Really glad to hear it.
Thanks, Andrew.
Hi. Thanks, Andrew. Okay, Barbara Honiger, you're next. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Richard. It's Barb. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, Richard and I have been on the phone at all ungodly hours of the morning for many days. Okay. So three questions. It was a very bad connection, so forgive if you've already mentioned this, but I couldn't hear it if so, and maybe others couldn't either. So I have three questions. I'll do them real quick, and then I can go back. The first one is, how do we, and on the 3rd of September and after, how do we actually read the Halsey report and any summaries? Will that be on? Will it be on the A&E website? That's number one.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have it there. You can download it.
Okay, the full report, and then I think you're doing like a shorter summary, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Next thing, one of the question askers, I can't remember which of the two before me, said, well, now that the Halsey report is done, it's not. It's in a draft, if you could confirm that. And I believe that all of us, the public now, as well as other professionals, engineering professionals and architects and such, we have until, what is it, October 13th to comment, and where and how do we comment that?
There will be instructions that will be released. I don't have those yet. I think it'll be until October 30th at this point. We're talking about moving that date back. But the comments can be submitted on the university website, I believe is how it's going to work. I can get that website for you.
Okay. Could you put the link to where people can comment after they've read it on the A&E website?
Yeah, it'll be on the website where you can download it. The instructions for providing comments will be there.
On your website, not just the University of Alaska.
I believe we'll put a link to the university website where comments can be made.
Oh, okay, very good. But that link will be on your website for us.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And the last question I can think of, maybe you said so, but what... The date, I believe, is September 11th for the Coast to Coast with George Nuri, but what time in Eastern Standard Time?
1 a.m. Eastern.
1 on the 11th. So would that be just going into the 11th or just going into the 12th?
Well, that's going into the 12th because the way I remember this, how I remember this is that it's 10 a.m. Pacific on the 11th.
Very good. Okay, so that would be actually technically on East Coast the 12th at 1 a.m. in the morning. Okay, those
yeah,
are my questions.
Yeah, pretty confusing, huh?
Yeah, well, it can be. It can be. So I would just like to make a quick comment, and that is being a representative of the Board of the Lawyers Committee and very active in all of these legal filings and the documents, I just want everybody to know that moving forward for these anniversary events, and there are a lot of them. There's Zurich, New York City, Washington, D.C., and those are the three main ones, that the architects and engineers are fully partnering with the Lawyers Committee and vice versa, as we did last year. And we just want, on behalf of the Lawyers Committee here, I want to thank Richard and his board for that, because it makes a huge difference. We are much more successful working together.
Yes, and Barb, would you go ahead and give us the full speaker lineup in Zurich and tell people about the live stream?
Okay, sure. Yeah. They were going to have to do that later, but seeing as you asked, I'll do it now.
Okay.
I think we should do it now. It's better because you've already mentioned it. Okay, so everybody needs to know that there is a very exciting event. I've mentioned this on previous calls, but not everybody may have been on the previous calls, and there is an update. So on September 11th, beginning at 1 p.m. Zurich, Switzerland time, until about 7:30 p.m. Zurich, Switzerland time, so for an event that lasts a little over 6 hours, 6.5 hours, we're holding a major, I think very historic event in Zurich, Switzerland, in the largest theater, the largest auditorium in central downtown Zurich, Switzerland. And I am going to send a photograph of the inside of the theater where we'll be speaking and the final flyer again to everybody, to the 9/11 telecom list, while I'm doing this call, actually, right after I speak here, so that you can see the incredible venue. It will be live streamed. Richard and Mick Harrison and Jane Clark. Jane Clark is the founding president, and she's also a board member and officer still, of course, of the Lawyers Committee. Mick Harrison is our litigation director, and myself, I'm an officer and a board member. The three of us will be speaking at the event on behalf of the Lawyers Committee. I will be there in person, of course, because I'm the co-organizer and co-producer of the event, with Jan van Aken. If you don't know who he is, he's been incredibly helpful. I started out being the only organizer and producer, and then thank God he came on board, and now we're a real team. Jan, for those who don't know, it's J-A-N, Jan van, V-A-N, Aken, capital A-K-E-N. Jan, J-A-N, Jan is the leader, essentially, of the Truth Action, 9/11 Truth Action Project, TAP for Europe. And we have TAP Europe calls that Richard and I and others are on once a month. I believe it's the last Tuesday of the month. But anyway, anybody who would like to be on can be on those calls. And if you'd like to know, you could just email me or Richard. You might as well email me. I can let you know how to get on. So the people at the event, we have an incredible lineup of speakers, and I'm really honored that they all said yes. It's just absolutely wonderful. So let me just a moment bring up the flyer. I'm going to send you the flyer again here that I'm going to read you from the flyer so that you know everyone who's going to be speaking. It will be live streamed. Now, it's on the flyer how you get the live stream, but I'll tell you here. So I've got the flyer open. So our speakers, our keynote speaker is Professor Dr. Daniel Gaensler. And he, of course, he's a historian, and he's probably the world's foremost expert scholar and book author on the Gladio operations, the false flag terrorist attacks against innocent civilians in Europe throughout the Cold War that were blamed on the left, the political left, in countries, especially Italy, Germany, but Spain, some others. The biggest attacks were like the Bologna train station bombings that killed over 80 people. And we now know that those were actually done by the Pentagon and NATO to be blamed on the left, to try to keep the left from gaining seats in parliaments in Europe. Terrible thing. So he's the world's foremost scholar, author, and public speaker on the Operation Gladio and false flags. He's expanded out to all false flags, and he is a passionate 9/11 truth person. So we are really honored to have him as our keynote speaker. He's also opening the event. So he'll have a short opening, and he will be our last speaker for an hour. And then after him is Neil Sarrett, Dr. Neil Sarrett, and everybody knows who Neil is. He's the lead author of the peer-reviewed paper on the finding of the nanothermite in the World Trade Center dust. Then we are going to have Dr. Pierce Robinson. Now, not everybody knows Dr. Robinson. He was at Sheffield University in the UK. He's now left that. He's now in Germany. And he has founded a new organization that is focused just on 9/11 and its links to the War on Terror. And it's called the Academic Working Group on Propaganda and the 9/11 War on Terror. I'm a member of that. I believe Richard is as well. And scholars throughout the world, many of whom have been fired even with tenure from their university positions for telling the truth in classrooms and in publications on 9/11. So he's a very, very important person, and he's going to be speaking. And then again, as I mentioned, three of us from the Lawyers Committee will bring everybody up to date That's Nick Harrison, the litigation director, Jane Clark, the founding president and board member, myself, an officer and a board member. I will be introducing them. They will be the main speakers on that, and then they will. I will be representing the Lawyers Committee on the panel. It's about 45 minutes with all the in-person speakers at the end of the event. We're also having a 40-year Swiss, actually. I don't believe he's a German engineer. I believe he's Swiss. But in any case, he works out of the Zurich area now. John, that's J-A-N, Andre Zaba, Z-A-B-A, 40-year structural engineer in the Zurich area who has been studying the World Trade Center collapses for about 5 years. And he's going to be talking from the perspective of the 9/11 truth movement and how difficult it is to break into the truth in Europe and in Switzerland. And interestingly, Dr. Ganser himself is going to be talking about how difficult it is to break 9/11 truth into any professional community in Switzerland as well. And Dr. Ganser is now located in Basel, Switzerland, at the University of Basel. So that's our lineup. The way that you, I'm going to send the flyer again. At the bottom of the flyer is the website. We have a very professional website for the event. And you just go to that website. It's www.1111september.eu/911perspectives, plural. But that's on the flyer at the bottom. So you go there. It's a very intuitive, clear website, very simple. In order to get advance tickets for the actual physical event, you click on the order tickets button, which is right there near the top. It's three places on the page, the home page. And there's also, when you click on order tickets or tickets button, the next page that comes up will give you about five or six options. One of them is, of course, to buy the ticket through the theater. We're doing them extremely inexpensively, the equivalent of about $2 for university students and faculty, $5.
Barbara, can I just interrupt you a minute? If that's all on the flyer, can I ask you, because Richard has limited time and there's still three people who would like to ask him questions.
Sure.
Can we
continue
with that? That's
fine. I thought it was the last person. You said there were three and I was the third. So,
yeah,
anyway,
no, other people.
Not
said,
everything
yeah.
is on the flyer, so I'm almost done. So the bottom line is what is not on the flyer, but Richard specifically asked, to get a live stream ticket, you would click on the order ticket or tickets button, you go to that page, and then you'd click on the live stream option, and you would pre-advance purchase your ticket, which is the equivalent of about $10. And then on the date itself, now remember the time difference, because it's 9 hours later than the West Coast, 6 hours later than the East Coast, and it will be live stream. So if you want to live stream, be conscious of the time difference. But in order, you would have to pre-purchase your tickets for the equivalent of about $10. You can do it with any credit card. It will automatically translate it into Swiss francs. So don't worry about that. It's about the same as dollars. And then on the day itself, or a little bit before, you would click on more information right under the live stream button on that second page, and you will be told how to access it. Live. So that's pretty much it, and later people can ask questions.
Thanks, Barbara. That's a lot of really good information. And, yeah, we can do it more later in the announcements also. Okay, thank you. And next is Susan Serpa. Susan, go ahead.
Yes, it's Sue Serpa in Massachusetts. I'm not sure if this is a useful question, but I can't help being curious. Do you have a list of Congress members who are particularly friendly and receptive to the Holsey report?
No. I can't name one that we're working with that is accommodating to us in any fashion whatsoever.
Okay.
We have a few lucky strikes here and there, but they seem to be matches that burn out without the fuel to fuel them.
Yeah. Are there any ideas on how to improve that with pre-visits or something like that?
We're going to visit them. We're taking the fire commissioner in uniform with us on September 11th. We're asking every one of our 70,000, well, maybe only 50,000 of those are American, email list supporters to make up an appointment. So out of that, we've only got 12 appointments so far. So if you've got any other ideas, I'm all ears.
All right. I'll put my thinking cap on. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Okay, Charles Ewing Smith, you're next. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Richard, it's Chuck Smith.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine, man. Thanks for hanging in there. You and I started working together 10 years ago when we produced 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. And
yep, Chuck is our executive producer of that movie.
And it was those were great times. We were, you know, talking daily, and everything was, like, growing, and it was fantastic. And one of the things that we all, you know, enjoyed right off the bat is that we were seeking recognition and approval from architectural societies. And so we expended enormous amount of energy going and trying to get these architects to warm up to the facts. And it never went very far. But I noticed a couple years ago that you guys were really starting to turn up the fire on going to confront the engineers and make them deal with the facts. And so my question is that I haven't heard much about what's happened there. I've heard there's been some successes. Could you give me a quick update as to how the engineering outreach is going?
Well, yes, and it's not all in my head. Roland Engel is leading up our project due diligence effort, and he's got 60 structural and civil and other kinds of engineers, but mostly actually structural and civil, lined up to do presentations, and there's been a dozen presentations so far to chapters of the American Society of Civil Engineers and university chapters and other various presentations to interested folks throughout the country. And they're all excited. They've gone to 3 different conferences where they have handed out literature and created actually quite a stir, with the American Society of Civil Engineers to the point where they put out a fairly nasty note to their chapters about us, just like the, not dissimilar from the activities of the American Institute of Architects, which has banned us now from their conferences as a result of our activism and our booths and the evidence that we present there to the passersby. So it's a lot of activity, and we do have a whole page on all this activity at ae911truth.org/projectduediligence, I think it is. Nevertheless, under what you can do on our website, you'll see Project Due Diligence next to the volunteering section there.
All right, great. Well, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm excited, so excited about where we're at right now, and with Professor Halsey's efforts are just so wonderful. Now, these kinds of, this Professor Halsey thing should be like a spearhead to any of these engineering societies, don't you think?
Yeah, that's the whole reason we spent 4 years developing it and paying $300,000. All of our collective hard-earned cash, putting it together. So I believe it'll turn the academic institutions and the professionals, the engineering industry, upside down.
It should.
That depends on if they look at it. It depends on if the media, you know, carries it. We can do all these things that we do in the 9/11 Truth Movement, and you know, they have a way of ignoring it. So we're quite concerned, but we would need to create something they can't ignore, and we're hoping this is that.
Yeah, I think this is it. You're going to do WTC 1 and 2 also the same way?
Well, I'd like to. You know, that's going to cost $1 million. So it's a much larger project. So if this goes well, and our the truth movement is excited about it, and we want to do it, and Halsey or somebody wants to take it on, I don't see why not.
Yeah, I don't either.
Go ahead, Chuck.
No, go ahead. You're the man.
One of the things it'll prove is that lightweight floor trusses failing under even the worst fires, which were not there at the time of the collapse, but even so, they wouldn't develop the lateral force on the exterior columns of that building to cause them to buckle. So the whole initiation of collapse theory on the part of NIST for the Twin Towers is going to be proven to be out the window altogether right off the bat. And then lo and behold, you cut the core columns in the computer model, and the antenna falls first, just like in the videos, which NIST completely ignored after FEMA before them found to be the case. We can show exactly how that building came down.
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. You're doing a wonderful job, and thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Chuck. Really appreciate it.
Okay, our next and last question is from Sherry Jacobs. Sherry, go ahead. Sherry.
Okay. Hi, Richard. This is Sherry Aspen in San Diego, and you kind of answered my question. Hi. I was wondering, but once this comes out, how can we help, and who would you recommend that we share it with, like all the engineers in San Diego that I can find and email it to them or bring it to them, or what can we do to help this?
There you go, because the more hits people have from different places, the more they are willing to listen. That's been proven time and time again. So you send it to every engineer in San Diego. Somebody else, like Ted and Elise, do the same thing. You know, the third time they get it, and maybe the first, they end up reading it. And also to the universities there. There's some great engineering universities there in Southern California and San Diego. And so if everybody's doing this, you know, we can force it on them. It's just an act of will of the public and the activists who really care and are taking action. That's what's going to make it happen, I think.
Okay, and Mr. Husley, is he willing to work on the Tower 1 and Tower 2, you think? Or is he burnt out, or what do you think?
Once he recovers from work, he's working day and night fixing some of the edits and so forth that we have given him. He'll probably get a second wind, you know, and especially if the university gets some positive accolades and starts feeding them to him in different forms. I think he'll be very willing to do it. He's basically he was just kind of, oh, let's talk about that later. That's the kind of response he's given us. But I think he'll come around on it.
And now that Building 7 has been completed, that kind of set a precedent so that the other two towers will be a little bit easier to do because of the report of Building 7. Is that correct?
Yes, for a whole number of reasons, not the least of which is their familiarity with the SAP and Abacus software programs. And maybe getting the graduate students that worked on those programs back again. And then the political, if he doesn't get doused politically with bad feedback from the governor of Utah or whatever, Alaska, we just have to see how the fallout goes. It could be very positive for them. Some of it will be negative. You know, these things are going to be very interesting to watch.
But that whole university must be pretty in our corner to even allow their engineering department to do this, correct?
Yes, the very dean, the chancellor of the school was very positive about the study. And the dean, well, he's the chair of the civil engineering, but the dean of that college was very behind them as well. I mean, I don't know what it takes to get such a thing to happen, because this university also has defense contracts like every other university, which usually end up being a pressure point from the powers that be. So I don't know how we were able to escape that in this case, but he is, maybe it's divine intervention. Who knows?
So that would be nice for us to thank that university, correct?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
Send them a letter, and we may even put out a bulletin after the study comes out, asking everybody to let them know that you really appreciate all the hard work they did in this important ground change, sea change of a report.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Richard, someone else has gotten in line to ask a question, but I know you have a time frame there. Do you have time for another question, or do you need to go?
Yeah. It'll be about 5 more minutes until people start showing up here for a meeting that I'm having at my house.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, so we'll do one more question then. Allison Maynard, you're next. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is Allison Maynard. Richard, I have two questions, actually. The first one is, interestingly, right now you are not cutting out, but at the beginning of your presentation we couldn't hear, and I wondered if you could recap, please, exactly what the findings were of Hulsey. Like you said, that one thing was compared to another and they were identical. I guess the pictures of set Tower 7 in its free fall and their modeling, is that accurate?
Yes, my apologies for that. Professor Hulsey does is challenged all of the assumptions, almost all of them, and found them wanting from NIST. Their entire collapse initiation theory is based on unfounded assumptions. Basically, it's fraud, but he stopped short of calling it that. In the end, what he shows is that the building could not have come down by fire, but then he takes out all 80 columns on 8 floors, and down low in the building, and lo and behold, the building falls for 2.25 seconds at free fall acceleration, and exactly, nearly symmetrically, as it does in the videos. So our video that we're putting together will show that in the end, compared side by side, his computer model with their video, showing, gosh, well, then the obvious question is, how did all those 82 columns get taken out at once on at least 8 floors? And there's only one way, of course.
Yes, Well, thank you.
He stopped short of naming that way, but that's where the intrigue sets in. I think the engineers will start to have to think for themselves at that point, and hopefully they'll start looking at our evidence, which is, of course, overwhelming. I think,
yes.
I've always thought for 10 years, 12 years now, that the evidence is all you need. My God, everybody will look at it, will want to act out like I did for the truth, and that just hasn't been the case across, you know, architecture and engineering world, or, you know, even certainly the media. There's very few people that are acting being activists about this.
That's appalling.
Okay.
Can I quickly ask a second one? Because what you said earlier,
yeah.
Richard, you were implying that the reason for towers 1 and 2 to come down was independent of planes. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think it's the case that the planes had nothing to do with the destruction of those towers. Is that
Thank
your
you.
Question?
I think so, too. No, that's great. I didn't realize that you did think that way.
And furthermore, the fires had nothing to do with the destruction of those towers.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, the evidence shows that they were brought down with both high-energy explosives, thermite, and nanothermite.
Yes, okay. That's terrific. Thank you for your work.
Richard, thank you, Allison. Richard, someone else, Peter Ketchum, actually would like to ask you a question. Do you have time for one more?
Yeah, hey, Peter.
Okay, Peter, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, Richard, this is really just a comment for everyone to hear. I reviewed Halsey's report very carefully, read every word with a fine-tooth comb. What I found that was absolutely brilliant on his part is when he got to the, you know, I was wondering how he was going to handle modeling controlled demolition. And he very brilliantly, as far as I can remember, he never used the word controlled demolition. He simply said, here's a simulation when we remove all the columns simultaneously. And then you see the animation that, you know, and I thought that is absolutely brilliant, that approach. I mean, that is, I don't know how to phrase it other than that. It was brilliant to frame it that way. So that's my comment.
All right, thank you, Peter. All right, Richard, any comments for that, or are you ready to sign off?
No, I've got my guests here, so I got to scoot. Thank you so very much. I really
thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you, Richard.
Thank you for those comments, Peter. Thanks, Greg. I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so... All right, we're back into lecture mode, and I'm just going to... unmute David Hooper, our next speaker. And Craig McKee is going to introduce David Hooper. So, Craig, you're ready to go?
Yes, absolutely. David Hooper is a broadcaster and a filmmaker and an entrepreneur. And in May 2013, he decided to make a short video for his friends and family to convince them to take a second look at the official story of the 9/11 attacks. And that small video would become the film, The Anatomy of a Great Deception, which was released in September 2014. David shares his personal story and many more in the movie, which has been viewed more than 30 million times as of early 2018. He is currently working on The Anatomy of a Great Deception Part 2, which he plans to release in 2020. So I'm sure we'll hear some more about that. So I'm going to pass it over to David.
Hey, everybody. Thanks, Craig. You saved me some time for the introduction, but basically you've got it right. I was just a regular guy that took the science and the research that's done by a lot of the people on this phone call and digested it and just turned it into a story that, you know, regular, quote-unquote, regular folks relate to, which is why I think the movie resonated. So we put that out in 2014, and along the way, I kind of went from being an entrepreneur to an activist, which is where I am now. And we're in the process of making part two, which is a continuation of the research story. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the movie at all, but the research story, which is also a personal drama unfolding in the family and how it impacts the people around us and the effects of your worldview being turned upside down, that, you know, the people that have gone through this and are still in droves going through it, because this little war of attrition that we are all fighting here is working. I mean, people that still believe the official 9/11 story, I suspect are now truly in the minority in this country. And, AGD2, that's Anatomy of a Great Deception 2, Part 2, we just call it AGD2, which is set to come out next September 3rd, is meant to keep a lot of eyes on this story. It's set to come out on the 19th anniversary of 9/11. It's going to use 9/11 as an anchor point, and we're going to start to connect some other things in history. It's some other institutions in this world that seem oddly close to 9/11, from the Federal Reserve to the CIA to Mossad to historical events from JFK to the Reagan shooting to James Forrestal's apparent suicide. It's intended to be what we termed a docu-thriller. It's very factual and well-researched with hopefully a compelling story that's really millions of people's stories. So architects and engineers and definitely the lawyers committee are very near and dear to my heart because I care very much about 9/11. And a couple more things on the movie before I open it up for back to you guys is I'm a personal believer in having events as anchor points. It gives people a reason to bring their friends somewhere. It's one of the reasons we're really trying to approach this like a Hollywood type of movie with premieres and a little bit of fanfare so that the people that are involved in it, which is going to be the 9/11 community, can bring their loved ones, the ones that are we often get the most resistance from. And it's sometimes getting your inner circle on board with 9/11 that allows you to actually become somewhat of an activist. I think some of the people on this phone call might be able to understand that. So we have a campaign that's about to begin. It's going to begin through, we're going to run it through this website called Indiegogo, which is known as a crowdfunding site, which I don't really like that moniker because people think donations. But this is going to be a platform that's going to allow our community to get involved with the movie on not just a financial level, but it's really turning the 9/11 truth community, which is often they've got the desire to do something, but they're not sure what to do. And this, for many people, could be something that could keep them busy and allow them to earn enough money to do this even full-time if they so choose, beginning soon when this campaign begins. We don't have a hard start date yet, but we're in the vicinity of a couple of weeks out. And we've already, part of the plan is to turn the entire 9/11 community into a promotion, marketing, and financing army, in a sense, for this film. And we've already got 81 people signed up to actively promote this once we begin. And the details of how it's promoted, you don't need to get lost in that, but it's very simple. It's as simple as you're going to get a link to our film's campaign, and then if you, whatever social media or email groups, whatever, wherever you want to share it, any activity generated through that domain, if someone so chooses, can be commissioned going back to their organization or to that individual to help fund the very activist-type work they do. So, the plan's about to launch. We are setting this up to have a series of events, make it somewhat of a tour, a 9/11 tour next year. We wanted everyone to put this on their calendars. To help support this, we've come out with a line of quote cards. And if you guys want to take a look at them while I'm talking, I don't know who's at a computer, but if you can get a glimpse on where we're going with this if you visit facebook.com/401quotes. And these cards are some very eye-opening quotes, and many of them, for instance, are from 9/11 insiders, Albert Stubblebine, Mike Gravel, Dan Rather, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to be using this as a promotion tool. But I'm offering right now, anyone listening on the phone call, we're going to be having little sponsorships on these cards. And if anyone would like to get their name or their organization's name circulating, just let me know afterward, and I will give a sponsor away on one of those cards for anyone that's interested. So that's the status of what we've got going on now. The film is, you got a little bit of background. Everyone's been asking to see parts of it. And just to make it simple, we are essentially putting a lockdown on viewing anything until we get into next year. till January of 2020. You've got a decent idea of what it's about. You can go find trailers and things of that nature attached to. The website I just gave you will link you into everything ultimately. So at this point, I'm going to, I've got a couple questions myself, which I'm going to throw out to the audience, which I hope maybe I can get answered. But the first one is, I am very interested in any ideas you might have in how to involve, and I mean really involve the community in this so they feel ownership in it, so that when we're doing the Detroit or Chicago premiere or the New York City or San Francisco premiere, which are all scheduled in next September of 2020, so that people in the community want to bring their friends who might be on the fringe or might need that little push over a fence, bring them to an event like this, because there's something that happens when you view something like this in large groups. Anyhow, that's what we found after the first set of premieres. So one is, what ideas do you guys have? Are there ways you think or would advise us to position this movie to take advantage of some of the things that are going on, perhaps with this Halsey report or the Lawyers Committee? Third question is, are there any other cities besides Detroit, Chicago, San Francisco, and New York that you think we should put on a calendar? And the last question I have, which is an easy one for you, Cheryl, is, if I wanted to send an email to everyone on this phone call, how would I do it? And I'm now going to turn the mic back over to you guys, and I'll answer any questions if anyone has any.
Hi, thank you very much, David. So I'm just going to put us into Q&A mode. So again, star 6 if you want to get in the queue to ask a question. And, David, if you just send to Craig and I or to me your email, whatever you we'll send it out to everybody if you want to reach them. And I think I might have muted you. Yes, I did. Okay, you're unmuted now, David.
Got that.
Okay, yeah. And I would actually like to do a showing of the film in at the University of Hartford, where I do my radio program next September. So if that works for you in any way, let me know.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We will definitely, we're going to have a lot of miniature screenings through those screening kits. I don't know if you got a screening kit last time.
I can't remember, yeah. We did show it, though. We did show it, so we must have, okay.
All right, well, we'll talk about that afterward, because we have a couple other things to talk about, too, but
okay, great.
Sure.
Okay, well, let's get going then with the questions and responses to your questions. So first is Susan Serpa. Susan, go ahead.
Yes, you asked if any other cities would be good to put on the schedule, and I think Boston is a very good start.
Susan, can you say that again? There was a ding.
I'm sorry. You asked if there was any other cities to put on your schedule, and
yeah.
I think Boston would be a very good place.
Okay, good idea.
Yeah, we have a number
very
of
good
activists.
Idea.
Yeah, I can put you in touch with that could help out with this.
All right, Susan. Thank you.
Okay, great. And our next person is Mike Cook. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thanks so much, David, all your great work. I've tried to join the meetings a number of times, but Skype was asking me for money, you know, or to put my credit card in, so I never did. I don't know if – I never managed to join a single meeting. If there's some way I can call in – I've got a landline here that I'm on now. I've got free long distance in the country, and that's what I like to use. I used to do Skype, but then they started getting more difficult and – The connection can be tenuous and whatnot. So that's like a question for you. I'm really glad that this film is still being made and there's like a lot of time yet. I mean, there's so many conspiracies, and which ones do you choose? I don't know if you're aware of all of the evidence surrounding the Vegas shooting. I happened to be laid off at that time. It was just a couple of weeks, but I was sitting at home on the computer all day, every day, and there were just, you know, there were thousands of people on the strip that night. They all had smartphones and social media accounts, and they all posted their experiences, you know, their stories, their narratives, and backed them up with photos and videos. There were shootings all over town. You know, there's a lot of very solid evidence that says the official story here is hogwash, as is often the case. And I'd encourage you to put that in there. A lot of the links were taken down. I had a bookmark folder full of stuff, and a lot of them went away. But some of them are still there, and some of the people that survived were later killed. I think it got up to about 8. The people that were really vocal, a lot of noise, they died suddenly and mysteriously.
We're not short of there's plenty to choose from, current and historical, for sure.
Yeah, so, I think the more immediate stuff, things that aren't so distant in the past, are better. I think it'd be great to touch on JFK and RFK and MLK. Hell, that went to court. You know, there's a book out, on Martin Luther King. It's great to touch on all those, but these more immediate things that are not so distant in the past, maybe, you know, better for you to get on. One that's near and dear to my heart.
We do as well. There's a good smattering of very recent events in there as well, without a doubt.
Cool. Yeah, the Virginia Tech shooting stinks to high heaven, if you're not aware. That one's very, very close to me. Would you be interested in any feedback on the cards? Because I saw some of the cards, and some of them I had some questions about, and I think it would be a good idea if, you know, folks who had alternative information, a different take on the matter, were able to speak up. I don't want to see you put out anything that's, you know, not 100%.
But I guess I didn't understand the question about the cards, and we can.
I don't remember specifically. I just remember
that.
Looking through a bunch of the cards there, and going, "Oh, that stinks. That's not right." And I tend to be a pretty informed fellow. I'm a human, and I make mistakes also. But you know, there's a lot of BS out there. We are overwhelmed with misinformation and disinformation.
Well, that each quote on those cards was sourced by me personally. Like, and I went and saw the original. We didn't use hearsay quotes unless it was a deathbed confession. And each one of those, you know, I would absolutely vouch for. Like, that, those are pretty accurate. A lot of quotes that I was hoping to find, I couldn't find, so we had to pull them out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're talking about the sort of subjective comment section below, which are my personal thoughts, yes, I'm sure a lot of people might disagree with some of the things I write in there, but most of that is intended to get people to think. However, if you could send me an email or give me a place where I can reach you. And you and I just talk about this on the side, I'd be interested to hear a little bit more about it.
That'd be great. Yeah, I'll try to make that happen through the web and not take up any more time.
Yeah, just private.
One more thing.
Go ahead.
One more thing about the debut of your movie. Something I've been trying to be all over throughout this whole process is colleges. You know, the colleges have student groups, student clubs. And if a student club is formed, it has access to the movie theater at the college. And college kids are bored, and, you know, the movies are cheap, and they go to them. I had a couple successful screenings at universities in the area of Loose Change. back before architects and engineers, and then experts speak out when that happened. I've had a very difficult time around here getting a student group started because they have to have a faculty sponsor, and the faculty don't want to go there, understandably. But it's you know, reaching the young people, you know, the folks that are coming kind of from a different place and are very caught up in all their things, but also have a lot of fire. You know, the 60s, a lot of changes have happened because of the young people. Now we've got the climate folks on it. So I don't know what you can do. I just wanted to throw it out there as a suggestion. And to get people to come in groups, your first question, involve the community, free pizza, free beer. You know? offer them something that they can't turn down. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Next person with a question is Peter Ketchum. Peter, go ahead.
I have two brief comments. First, you were asking about cities, and I would suggest you consider the Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota area. I lived there for 11 years, and it's a very educated population. There's a lot of Scandinavian influence there, and
right.
that tends to mean that they pride themselves on tolerance and open-mindedness. And also, they got a lot of tall buildings there, especially in Minneapolis. They take great pride in their skyscrapers, which for the northern Midwest is pretty unusual. So they might be real interested in that.
Okay.
And then my second comment is just when I reached an awareness about 9/11 and 3 years ago, your film had a big impact on me, and was one of the films that really propelled me to come forward and get involved. So I just wanted to mention that.
Oh, that's great to hear, Peter. Appreciate it. But it's just an amalgamation of the research done by the guys that are on this call. I mean, that's really where my thanks should be going. And we're going to highlight a few of them at these premieres. That secret's yet to come. Any
Very
other
good.
Questions from anybody? Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. Was there anything else from you, Peter?
No, that's all. Thanks.
You're all set, Peter? Okay, great. All right.
Yeah.
And the next one to ask a call is John O'Malley. John, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to suggest you may want to consider adding Washington, D.C. to your list of cities. There are some people in the group that have some connections to theater and filmmaking. Over.
Yeah, we thought about D.C. is still a big possibility. It's one of those that we think will either be a great city or terrible. not sure which way it'll go. But you think that one, you think there'd be an audience there for something like that?
Well, we have put on things in the past, and I'm just suggesting it as a city you should consider.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, John. Next person with a question is Xander Arena. Xander, go ahead.
Hey, you may have some luck in Phoenix. I just wanted to throw that out there. Alternative.
Oh, yeah. My sister lives there. That's probably going to happen. I just didn't want to throw it out there, but thank
cool.
you for saying it. It means we're in the right
place. Right on, man. Hey, when you're out here, let's grab some coffee.
I will definitely do the call you, Xander.
All right on, brother. Bye.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, next one to ask a question, Sherry, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sherry with San Diego 9/11 Truth, and we'd like to invite you to come here. We rent out the Joy Spears Community Center once a month for some kind of a 9/11 event, and we usually, like when Mr. Boleyn came, we had standing room only. So we have a pretty good 9/11 truth community here in San Diego. Also, your film really touched my heart because I have had just a really hard time with my family.
my daughter just recently had a baby, and her husband's family, I was over there waiting for the baby to be born. It was the week before, and just getting to know this really nice couple. He was a Vietnam veteran. You know, he had a big scar from his knee all the way up to his groin. He got blown up in Vietnam, and hardworking, nice American family. And somehow 9/11 got brought up, and oh boy, stayed up till 1:30 in the morning trying so hard to be as kind as I can and try to tell them, and they would not listen to me. They shoot the messenger on every single thing I tried to show them. And how would you, and it's been very isolating for me with my family. Now, with strangers, I seem to be able to talk to them about it, and they get it much easier than my own flesh and blood. I mean, how do you recommend that we deal with this?
Well, you just said it, and this is what works for me. Is that you can sit there. I think it's why Jesus Christ said you can't preach in your own hometown, because you can. Your family knows you on a different level, and I had the same problem in my family. They dismiss me. But if some stranger were to come in wearing a suit and say the exact same thing I just said, all of a sudden they would be, oh, so they would believe that person, and that's. In
right.
a sense, that's what the first and this next film is meant to be, is something, is that guy, that metaphorical guy coming in a suit to say exactly what it is you're trying to say, and say it with all the visuals and the credibility and the research and the charts that you need at those 1 a.m. conversations you have, but you can't prove 9/11 verbally like that. It's something, you just have to see it. And our idea is, in this campaign, when I say involve the community, so for instance, if someone were to do something really simple, like purchase 6 copies of a DVD to hand out to their friends, we would actually include their name as some level of producer, like an associate producer or coordinating producer or something like that. And this is why something you said, Sherry, that I think is very important here. We're not doing this for vanity purposes, but for if someone wants to participate in this movie on some level through some perk in Indiegogo, you're going to get your name on the screen of this film so that you can tell the people around you that you are a production associate on a film that is playing in, you know, Phoenix or San Diego. And I love the idea of going to San Diego, not just for the premiere, but for one of your monthly things, which you and I will talk about in a second. But when you're telling your family, hey, you're a producer on a movie and the movie's premiering, odds are most people it's a chance to turn it into an event. Get everyone dressed up a little bit. You make a night out of it. You're going to go literally see your name on screen, and you're, in a sense, you're going to be forcing, not at gunpoint, but through a fun event, a social gathering, you're going to be putting this information in a way where the people with you can't avoid it. They're going to, in a sense, have to reconcile it, which that's what the first movie was intended to introduce this to the people close to you, because we waste so much energy battling our inner circle just to get onto calls like this, where then we start the real battle, which is to wake up the masses. So that's what this film is intended to do, is really intended to worm inside, like at an individual level, so that the people you share it with around you are going to at least understand where you're coming from. They may not believe you or what your conclusions are about all of this, but if someone, after looking at either one of these films, doesn't understand there's a problem with 9/11, it's not because of a lack of evidence or education or intelligence. At that point, it's a psychological issue. But the best thing I think I can do, because I'm not really a scientist or a researcher, although I could read journal articles all day, I'm that kind of guy, is to put this in a story format that house husband or housewife would just get, you know, that connects with them. So a long-winded answer to your question, Sherry, is find events like the premiere of this movie to get them in front of other people that have that vision or that picture of credibility where they're saying what it is you're saying. And I think Richard said this just before I got on, and any advertiser will tell you this, you start to hear a message enough and you start to accept it even before you consciously realize you're accepting it. So whether it feels like it or not, you're actually having an impact on your friends. And I've had many of my friends circle back, even 3-4 years later, some incredible just cathartic victories where someone that was making fun of me, teasing me for 5 years, just this summer, finally got it and is now thanking me for being persistent. And I think you'll experience a lot more of that.
I mean, because you have a wife, correct?
Used to. We're going to talk about that in part two. We didn't make it for a bunch of reasons, but she's a mile down the road, and we're good now.
Okay, I mean, does she support you? I mean, that's really important because, like, my friends Ted and Elise, they're the San Diego 9/11 Truth, and I so envy them because they're a couple together that really both know what's going on and work together, and that would be so great. You know,
that's the key, is to get your loved one and your spouse on board with you. And that's what started all of this, was just a desire to get my spouse and my sister and my mom on board with me. So, and by and large, it worked and seems to continue working for other people. So
I need to learn how to make that work because it hasn't worked for me so far.
Barry, are you good now with your questions?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay,
thanks,
great.
Sherry.
Thank you.
I'll be in touch with you about San Diego. I'd love to come visit.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Okay, so the next person asking a question, their name hasn't come up, but your phone number is 727-482-9871. So if that's you, please identify yourself. Yeah.
Hey, it's Kevin O'Neill from Tampa, Florida. I don't know if that's David Hooper's voice on the other end and his assistant, but thanks. You guys for organizing as you are, producing as you are. Sorry I'm late to the call,
Kevin.
But hey, is that David? Is that David himself?
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, you're a rock star, man. Thanks for waking people up as you are. So my question is, I understand there's a fundraising effort, and I apologize for being late to this call, like 60 minutes late. So if you already hit that 100 times, you can move on. But my main question is, how do you suggest we best leverage this sequel for the purpose of fundraising for the third movie?
I think I might have missed something. What's your question, Kevin?
How would you suggest we utilize the sequel you got coming out, your next movie, for future fundraising for future movies?
That is a good question. You know, I've been reticent about going through big institutional movie studios because I don't want them to quash the message or limit what it is we write per se, which is that's just how they do what they do. We've really been employing, and I don't know if this is the best way to go about it, but we did sort of a guerrilla/grassroots effort to begin with 4 years ago, and we're kind of repeating that with just some improvements, dropping things that didn't work and adding things that did, and just doing it with a much larger audience. But I don't know enough about this to comment intelligently about the best ways to piggyback one film off of another to propel the third one. It's something that's on my mind all the time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to share with you my better half, Susie. She's a health coach, and there's a book called The China Study, written by two doctors, one of which is, I forget his first name, his last name's Campbell. And him and his family did a movie called Plant Pure Nation about 2 years ago. It was produced by John Corey, who's been a producer of tons of documentaries.
So we got close with them when they were doing their rollout. Make a long story short, part of the fundraising effort was to get, you know, like-minded groups, like all your 9/11 groups on the planet Earth, to, you know, schedule a group meeting. Where, you know, hey group, this is an opportunity for you to schedule a movie. I want you to promote, you know, in your case, it's going to be saying my movie. and we're going to pre-sell tickets on this website. I forget the website's name, but I can find out for you. So that we can secure an actual movie house, do this on a digital screen. And, you know, and that's one way. Get some early fundraising. You can also do some, you know, who wants to be like an anchor donor. You know, everybody involved in the 9/11 Truth Movement, of course, is going to be wanting to wake up as many people's minds as they can. We're all feeling powerless out here, so to speak. We see a guy like you getting it done. You know, we just want to reach out to how can we help. And, you know, we're just a tiny speck of sand compared to the number of people out there who feel completely powerless over this globalist, you know, cabal running things. So in a sense, who's a whale in where I live, you know, Tampa, Florida, who's a wealthy individual who's so pissed off they want to fill this movie house? You know, we need $20 a seat, sir or ma'am, and that way you can invite, you know, a busload of people in here for free or even advertise this for free just to get people in the chairs. I'd be happy to work with you offline, try to recreate, you know, what John Corey and Plant Your Nation did.
Yeah, you and I, Kevin, we're due for a one-on-one call anyway. We're updating some of that support material for this little crowd army I was talking about. So we'll spin off, and you and I will talk about that in the next couple of days. And obviously, I got your number. We've been in touch. So, but good thoughts.
Yeah, man. Keep up the good work, y'all.
Thanks, man.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. And the last question is from Barbara Honegger. Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is really great you're doing. Yeah, great to have you on. The first thing I wanted to do was to also plug for, not necessarily for your grand opening or premiere, whatever you call it, but you do need to show it in Washington, D.C. I think that that's really critical, personally.
Okay.
Obviously, New York. I can't remember his first name is Richard, and I can't remember his last name, but the playwright. Now, I realize that a live theater play is different than a movie, but it's, you know, it's similar. And he did that movie, Something Dust to Dust, in New York City. I went to it. It was packed every single night, every night that they showed it, and it's being run again in Washington, D.C. And, in fact, Richard Gage stays with this guy. I can't remember his last name, but he's the playwright. And okay. He's had really good response in New York City, and you might want to talk to him, ask Richard Gage for his name. I just can't remember it. And maybe get in touch with him. Richard will be staying with him when Richard's in Washington, D.C., starting on, I think, the 9th or the 10th of September. That's where he stays. They're that close. And you might want to ask him why D.C. works. I mean, why does he think he's going to have a good audience there? But I really
Richard
think
Nelson?
D.C. What?
The Richard Nelson?
No, not Nelson, no. No, if you said it, I'd recognize it. But sorry. But just ask Richard Gage. Stay with him when he's in D.C., okay?
All right, so I will.
Yeah. I also want to second showing it in San Diego. They have a fantastic group. I mean, it was basically all people for my two presentations at the Joyce Beer Center. They do it every month, so, you know, you could just choose your month. And I think you'd have standing room only there, too, for sure. Also, Denver and Boulder, Colorado, especially Denver, you'd want to choose one of the two, probably Denver. They have a really strong group, so you'd want to go there as well.
What was Sherry's last name? Who is the San Diego coordinator?
Sherry Aspen.
Aspen,
I thought
like
it was Sherry Jacobs.
Well, let me unmute.
If you're asking about Colorado, you'd want to get in touch with Fran Shure, Shure. Right. Or Marty, M-A-R-T-I, Hopper, H-O-P-P-E-R. Marty's the head of the group. She and her husband Bob in Boulder, and Fran Schur is in it.
Yeah,
Marty's on the call.
Oh, hi, Marty. Yeah. You speak for yourself.
She's muted. She's muted, but
Sherry.
She's on the call.
I unmuted okay. Sherry, so she can tell you. Sherry, is your last name Aspen or Jacobs?
My last name is Aspen. My maiden name is Jacobs. So it gets stuck in there sometimes. Sherry Jacobs Aspen.
Okay. I thought it was the same person. And then I did have one comment for you about your film. Now, if I understand correctly, you're working on your second film for 2020. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Your first film was wonderful. There was one thing that I would have changed. And
just
it was
one,
a real down. Allow me just to say this one sentence, okay? Everything was positive and upbeat in your film, except I don't think it's a good message for people to see that your family almost fell apart and then in your new film you've lost your wife. I don't think you want to put that out. I realize that it's being totally honest, but sometimes you can have too much honesty. I just want to put that out. It was a real downer, and I was sorry it was in the first film. Not for my sake, but I just think that it can turn people off, whereas the whole purpose is to turn people off.
Yeah, it's actually, it's really not an important part of this. It's not even really part of the second film, and I totally hear what you're saying, and it's
okay.
Already been, I agree with you.
Okay, I just wanted to get that out. Thank you very much for what you're doing.
Pleasure.
Okay, and David, do you have time for one more question? Someone else has gotten on the queue. Okay.
Sure.
All right, Peter Hitchum, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Peter again. Sorry to make another comment, but this is, I feel it's important for me to mention because it's diametrically opposed to what was just said. In your first film, when you talked about the struggles with your family and the pressures and that had one of the biggest impacts on me in the film. And so I would go the absolute other way and say, yes, keep that in there.
I guess I glossed over more of a complex answer, which actually would agree with what you're saying, Peter. This next film follows chronologically the actual investigation that I did. And by the time chronologically the movie's over, Betsy and I, everything is fine there. And there's really not much to comment on there. It's what's going on in my work circles and my relationship circles. And there's going to be a much bigger focus on that. And there wouldn't even be anything really to discuss with much more to discuss with the Betsy story, and I'm going to let that storyline just sort of fade away, and you'll see how we broach it in January, but neither one of you will be disappointed.
Okay, very good.
Okay, so we're going to end that now. David Hooper, thank you so much for being on tonight, and we'll be in touch about other things.
Sure, thanks.
And hopefully you'll come on again to give us updates as things move forward.
I will.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks,
okay,
David.
Bye. Okay, so now we're going to move on. We're going to go back into lecture mode for our third speaker. Okay, and we're going to unmute
I got him.
We got him.
I got David. Okay, I have David unmuted.
Okay, and James, is James on the call still?
Oh.
Yes. I'll unmute him. I'm here. Okay, got him. Okay. Okay.
Right.
So our next presenter is David Rold, and he's running for president in the primaries of the Green Party. And here to introduce him is James Hufford. James.
Well, I'm here, but you're just really lucky because I've been booted off the call twice now, and I just this second got back on.
Oh, okay, not
wow.
Good.
No, not good. So if I disappear, you'll know what happened. Anyway, I've been asked to introduce David. I'll go ahead with that. David Rolde is a candidate for the 2020 Green Party U.S. presidential nomination. And David is a revolutionary communist, anti-imperialist activist from Massachusetts. David was inspired to anti-war activism in 2001 after the 9/11 false flag attacks. David was horrified by the as we all were, by the pro-war patriotism all around him and by the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. Since 2001, David has been active in many anti-war, anti-imperialist, and anti-Zionist pro-Palestine struggles, organizations, and coalitions. In 2005, David founded Boston Anti-Zionist Action and an affinity group which protested in defense of Sudan against the so-called Save Darfur Zionist-organized pro-war propaganda campaign. David has also protested in defense of Iraq, Libya, Syria, Iran, Venezuela, China, Russia, and many other countries targeted by the imperialists. Regime change propaganda campaigns and wars. David is currently on the steering committee of Cindy Sheehan's March on the Pentagon Rage Against the War Machine organization. David is also involved in activism against corporations poisoning us. For example, David helped organize the Boston March against Monsanto for several years. David joined the Green Party in 2000. Has been active in the leadership of his state Green Party and is secretary of the Greater Boston Chapter of the Green Rainbow Party. So with that, I give you David Rolde.
Well, thank you. My name is David Rolde, and I really appreciate, can you all hear me?
Yes.
I really appreciate being that you're letting me present on the call. So I didn't realize you were going to read that long introduction. So I'll try to skip repeating all that stuff. I don't know if you all know me. For the past several years, I've been wearing a sign pinned to my shirt that says "Long live the Syrian Arab Republic," and with a picture of President Assad. I'm an anti-imperialist activist. My position on 9/11 is that it was perpetrated by people from the U.S. and Zionist regimes, including Netanyahu, and that Muslims and Arabs had nothing to do with it. So I started thinking about running in the Green Party presidential primaries after Jill Stein's campaign in 2016 because I want to get some more radical positions into the discourse in the Green presidential campaign. So Jill Stein talked about reducing the U.S. military budget by 50%, but I'm calling to totally eliminate the U.S. military and weapons industry. The U.S. military serves absolutely no positive purpose. Everything the U.S. military does is destructive. So cutting the military budget by 50% or even 75% is not enough. That would still leave hundreds of billions of dollars every year budgeted to fund genocide. The world can't survive many more years of the U.S. military wreaking social and environmental destruction. We need to shut it down. Also, the U.S. presidential election is a phony election. It's a staged drama. The billionaires choose a Democrat and Republican to pretend to run against each other every 4 years. The Green Party candidate, whoever it is a protest candidate against the phony elections. That's why people vote for the Green Party candidate, is to protest against the phony elections. So it's important that the Green Party presidential candidate speaks out. Against the system rather than talking as if it is a real election and lending legitimacy to their fake election. I'm an anti-colonialist. I recognize that the so-called USA is an illegitimate white nationalist colony on stolen land and built on slavery and genocide, and also that the Zionist entity of so-called Israel is an illegitimate white nationalist colony on stolen land in Palestine in the Middle East. So my platform is to shut down the USA and shut down the Zionist entity, stop all funding to so-called Israel. Free from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Turn over sovereignty of the land to indigenous people here and to indigenous people in the Middle East, and pay reparations. Turn over all resources and power to Africans and indigenous colonized people. White nationalist, imperialist capitalism has almost destroyed the world. We need oppressed people with a different mindset and power to save the world. So right now, one of the reasons that I'm running for the Green Party nomination is to confront the front runner candidate, Howie Hawkins, who was the Green Party candidate for governor of New York last year. Howie Hawkins believes the imperialist propaganda against Syria and other countries that the United States is attacking. Howie Hawkins' activism on Syria has been for overthrowing the Syrian government, not for stopping the war on Syria. So in May 2018, Howie Hawkins sponsored an ISO anti-Syria forum at the Brooklyn Commons. I drove down to New York and protested it. And inside this forum, they were circulating a petition to demand that the U.S. regime continue funding the White Helmets. The White Helmets are a group of al-Qaeda members who stage phony chemical attack videos to blame on the Syrian government to give Trump a pretext to shoot Raytheon missiles at Syria. And inside this forum in Brooklyn, speakers were denouncing the Green Party vice presidential candidate, Ajamu Baraka. People at the forum planned a protest against Ajamu Baraka at the Left Forum because Ajamu Baraka opposes the war on Syria. So this is the kind of stuff that Howie Hawkins supports. So I'm very disappointed that anti-imperialist activists who I work with and respect have encouraged Howie Hawkins to run for president. I don't know which countries the U.S. regime will be attacking or threatening next year, but I'm concerned that Howie Hawkins will be echoing the imperialist war propaganda rather than challenging it. There have been 3 Green Party presidential debates so far that I've been in. There are like 6 or 7 candidates, and I argue with Howie Hawkins about Syria at every debate. And at the last debate, Howie Hawkins said that he supports the protests in Hong Kong, which are organized by the CIA with people waving U.S. and British flags. And I'm also dissenting about the Green New Deal. Howie Hawkins and some of the other candidates talk about the Green New Deal, but the New Deal was originally a Franklin Roosevelt Democrat Party plan to have some reforms in order to save capitalism. The Green Party version of the Green New Deal is okay, but the name New Deal has made it really easy for the Democrats to co-opt the Green New Deal with a plan that does not call for shutting down the military and wars. I'm for revolution, not New Deal. I don't want to save capitalism. Capitalism is destroying the world. And I'm not sure. I think James covered almost everything else in the introduction. I don't know if you mentioned that I'm opposed to the geoengineering. I really liked Dane Wigington's presentation about geoengineering on this call a few months ago. So maybe I'll open it up to questions.
Okay. Thank you, David. I'll put it in Q&A mode here. Put *6 if you'd like to ask David a question. And David, while we're waiting for people to get in the queue, I wanted to ask you, what does it involve to the primary in the Green Party? When is the vote for that, and then what happened? Sort of what's the procedure for that? Oh, I think I have you muted. Hang on a second, David. Okay, there you go. Oops.
Now can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Sorry about that. Okay.
That's okay. So the Green Party has ballot status in 20-something states where they're going to have primaries, and in the other states, the state Green parties choose their delegates by some other method, at a caucus or a convention or something. It's pretty complicated, and what I'm trying to do now is get official recognition from the Green Party, which involves like a lot of bureaucratic stuff of getting 100 signatures and filing with the FEC with the campaign committee, which I've done, and getting 100 donations of $10. So I'm working on all this to try to get official recognition so that the Green Party U.S. will help me get on the ballot and the primary ballots in all the states.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and we have a question now. First to go is Mike Cook. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Mike Cook here. What a fun thing to hear somebody like you on this call. That's great. I voted for Jill in the last one. Are you familiar with Michael Parente?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, me too. He was the guy who really opened my eyes, and I want to recommend him to everybody in the group. Parente.
I agree.
Michael Parente. P-A-R-E-N. I got to look him up.
Yeah.
P-A-R-E-N-T-I.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I highly recommend all his stuff. You either have a liberal complaint or a radical analysis. That, you know, these things are happening on purpose, basically. So thank you. I support you. And good luck.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. And now Kevin O'Neill has a question. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, David Roldy. You know, there's a lot of people who appreciate that you have the freedom to speak as you are, that you are a member of a party that is able to operate in the United States, probably all 50 states, and that you have a shot at getting on stage to share to the voters what it is to have to sell as a communist. But the entire history of communism, even like, you know, light communism, has been a complete failure. It's never lasted really more than 10 years successfully, only exception maybe being the Soviets in Russia. But, you know, even just recently, Venezuela, which was a prosperous, probably the richest nation in South America, is in complete collapse after two different communist regimes, Maduro being the present one. And here you are selling the same model. I don't get how, you know, what even your mission is to think that you're going to, I mean, it defies logic. How does this make any sense? I mean, I own the land I'm on, and I'll fight to protect it. Yes, the people who founded this nation were white colonialists from Britain. It's correct. And we threw them out. We had a war against Britain, and we reformed this place. And it's been a bloodthirsty effort. I agree with that argument. You know, we killed Indian tribe after Indian tribe. If you look at the history of American war, the first 100 of them are, you know, family annihilation after family annihilation, i.e. Indian tribes getting slaughtered. It's disgusting. But it's over 150 years ago, basically, to say you're guilty or I'm guilty, or to even make reference to the color of somebody's skin and say they're guilty, is ludicrous. It's called logic and reason. What is the logic behind having the communists in charge, Mr. Roy? Thank you for allowing me to ask my question.
Okay, well, I mean, I obviously disagree with you. Venezuela wasn't prosperous when it was ruled by neocolonial capitalists. They had terrible poverty there, and then the Chavez and Maduro governments have used the oil revenue to lift people out of poverty and build housing for millions of people. And the only reason that they're having problems is because of like U.S. embargo and economic warfare and manipulating the oil prices and stuff like that. It's the same with every progressive and socialist country has been under attack by the capitalist imperialist countries. And
let me get this straight. The oil industry was taken by Maduro. I mean, it was operating.
The thief is the government, and they failed
it was operating, but the profits weren't going to the people in Venezuela. They were going to like a few people who were collaborating with the United States to rule over Venezuela.
Okay. Okay. Next question is from Bill Wilt. Bill, go ahead.
Hi, David. Congrats on taking this nervy approach, but some of the stuff I've been looking at now has occurred, has me thinking that maybe we need a global truth and reconciliation conference for going back to, 1900, at least First World War. I'm wondering if you think anything like that could fly, because, you know, you're certainly going against the headwinds.
I think the reconciliation conference has to go back further than that, at least to 1492, you know, and I mean, I think it's a good idea, but it has to actually make some changes and change who's in power, because like in South Africa, they've had truth and reconciliation, but they haven't really turned over power to black people. It's still a neo-colonial government, so it has to have there has to be a real change, not just talking about it, you know. And so going back to the last question, I've been concerned that a lot of people in the 9/11 truth movement believe like Nazi propaganda about communism being a Jewish plot and stuff, when the truth is that Zionists like funded and supported Nazi Germany to attack the Soviet Union and try to destroy communism. We need a different system. We've had capitalists in power, and we're, you know, the world is, there's massive extinction. We're on the brink of destruction. We need something different.
Okay.
Bill,
are you done with your question?
I'm done. Thanks.
Okay.
Can I ask? Can I ask one, Cheryl?
Sure. Go ahead, Craig.
Okay, great. I don't know if this will really be a question, David, but I just wanted to comment following your little exchange with Kevin. I just want to say I completely agree with what you're saying. You know, I think there's a long and very terrible history of countries, particularly, you know, in Latin America, where, you know, they are constantly under attack, as you said, from the U.S., And they, you know, people say, oh, well, look how poor they are. Look what, you know, what a failure socialism was or communism was in this country. And really, it's got nothing to do with that at all. In fact, Chavez was by far one of the most popular leaders in this part of the world when he was there. And frankly, I don't know what anybody else thinks, but I was very suspicious when he suddenly got cancer and died. I wonder if that was all by natural causes. But anyway,
it's the official position of the Venezuelan government that the United States poisoned him and caused the cancer and murdered him.
Yeah. Oh, I totally believe that that's extremely likely. Anyway, I just wanted to sort of say that I come down completely on your side of that discussion, and I think, you know, the U.S. has made a real point of making sure that, you know, they call it the threat of a good example, and making sure that a country like Cuba or Nicaragua, you know, or any of the Latin American countries, they just do everything they can to make sure that it doesn't succeed, so that they can then say, well, look, we told you it wouldn't work. Anyway, that's just a comment more than a question.
Thank you, Craig. And I also wanted to comment, David, that in Venezuela, you know, they have the world's largest or near largest gold and oil supplies and lots of other minerals. So, you know, obviously we want them. We want that country. We want to control it. So I do agree with
what you're saying. Yeah, and now they've caught the imperialists have confiscated all their assets that were in banks in London, et cetera, taken over Citgo, the oil company. Now, like it used to be that we should that we went to Sitka to buy oil to benefit the people in Venezuela, but now it's controlled by this U.S. puppet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's not right. It anymore.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much, David. That's the end of the questions, and good luck with your campaign.
Well,
thank you for
presenting. I really appreciate this opportunity. And it was a good discussion, I thought. Thank you.
Good luck, David.
Okay. So now we're going to... a star six to unmute yourself. Well, is it, what everyone could do that, and then we'll go into announcements. And if you could all do star six to unmute yourself.
Are we not able to unmute everybody at once?
I don't know. I thought we could, but I'm not sure how to do it.
My battery's dying.
So let me see if it's...
Okay, I unmuted them now. Yeah, I don't know why
that
was.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Great. Okay, so now we're going into the announcements portion. And, Barbara, I don't know if I cut you off earlier, so if you want to continue with any announcements, this is a good time.
Yeah, can I just comment, Cheryl? I mean, I think on that one point, I think we had covered that, right? The Zurich thing?
Right.
Well, that wasn't, we weren't cut off on that, were we?
I don't know. I don't know if she had more to say. I wanted to give her an opportunity to do it now. So, yeah.
Well,
Barbara,
were you
done, or do you have more to say?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I just wanted people to be able to ask a question if they wanted.
Okay. So we're not in Q&A mode, but if anyone has a question, just let us know you want to ask it.
I'd like to know if they miss out on watching you live streaming, will it be archived?
Of course, yes. Good question. I wasn't able to get to that. We're going to live stream it, but with the difference in time, it'll be kind of difficult for U.S. audiences very early in the morning, especially on the West Coast. Not so bad on the East Coast, like 7 a.m. on the East Coast. But yes, it will be professionally videotaped, and we're going to have a professional videographer, a video editor. Actually insert the PowerPoint slides of all the speakers. It'll take maybe up to a week and a half to do that, hopefully no more. And then we will put it up on YouTube, and I'd let everybody know the link.
Okay, so but if we're going to watch it in California, what time do we need to be up?
Well, let's see. It's 9 hours difference. You do the math. I'm not great on that. It's 9 hours difference from California, and it starts at 1 p.m. Zurich time. So that would be, wouldn't it, 5 a.m. in the morning, would it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to make a clock and a piece of paper to do it.
Okay. Anything else, Barbara?
Well, just to remind people, in a minute here, I'm going to be sending the flyer that has the website at the bottom where you can sign up to buy tickets in person and also to buy a live stream ticket. And very important, I just have a request for everybody. When you get the flyer, please forward it to anyone you know in Europe or any group of 9/11 related people you know in Europe, in particular Zurich and the Zurich area, Switzerland in general, and Germany. Thank you.
Well, Christopher Boleyn's over there. I'll send it to Christopher Boleyn. He's over there.
Oh yeah, I'm already in communication with individuals like that.
And I think that's 4 a.m. my time. I made a little clock on a piece of paper, and 9 hours from one looks like 4 a.m.
Yeah, four.
Okay. Does anyone else have any
very early? It's very early for the West Coast.
I'll probably watch it.
Okay.
Does anyone else have any announcements to make or any updates? Anything?
This is John O'Malley. Is David Hopper still on the call?
No,
David
Hooper.
Hello?
Oh, you are?
Okay, I just sent him on his LinkedIn the name and an email address of Richard Squires. He's the guy who's the playwright for The Blanket of Dust, which is the play about 9/11 that the current plan is to put it on in the D.C. area. This spring, over.
That's right. That's who I was trying to think of, Richard Squires. Thank you.
Gotcha. What's your name?
John O'Malley. I am in the D.C. area.
All right. I just wanted to say thank you, John.
So I sent it to your LinkedIn account.
All right. I will get in there and find it.
Okay, great. Any other announcements? Anything else? Any updates? Okay, hearing none, I think that it's time to adjourn our call. Thank you very much, everyone, for being on tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, any ideas about presenters for next month?
Wow.
Anybody have any ideas for presenters?
Yeah, maybe. What about that pilot, Dan Hanley? He might be cool to get on.
He would love to be on here.
I could get him if you guys want.
I think he should really talk real hard with his own radio station and stuff. That might be nice to put him on.
He doesn't stop. He keeps trying.
I know.
You
I
might
think
try
that
the
okay.
All right.
You might try
good suggestion.
Too. The New York. I know a woman who in Honolulu who grew up with Barack Obama and can tell you who he really is. And maybe she'll come on.
So you
I mean,
call
she's trying to get the message out about that, and I find her quite credible. Maybe she could come on and talk at our next meeting.
Why not?
Okay.
That would be a home run show.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, great. Then if I'll send you emails or send them to me if you have suggestions, and those sound all good, so we'll work on that. I may have Phil Giraldi also lined up. He's sort of not quite sure, so we're working on that.
That would be great.
I'm not sure if I got through, but I was suggesting that one of the fire chiefs from New York.
Yeah, that would be good. I can hear that.
They need to know that they're appreciated. Those fire chiefs, they need to know that there's people behind them.
Oh, it's so important.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So I'll contact Richard for that. Okay.
I did an interview with Christopher Gioia, who's the fire commissioner who drew up that resolution that they passed. So he's a very good, he speaks very well, and he's very passionate. So I think he'd be delighted to come on if we asked him.
Awesome.
Great. Okay.
I think we should write a bunch of thank you letters to a bunch of people, too. Thank you letter. Good to do.
All right, great. Good suggestions, everyone. Then we'll see you all next month.
No.
I believe the date is the 25th of September, so look forward to seeing you all then.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
Tired. No jumping, yeah.